Hello there, this is Carrie Rabideau, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Thank you for listening in on this podcast. Today we are going to have a discussion about the Be a 4-H Scientist, Materials in a Green, Clean World curriculum. Joining me to have that conversation is Anne Stevenson. Now, Anne is also an extension educator who has worked for many years with the Center for Youth Development. And one of the areas that she's focused on is developing and teaching STEM, which we know is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, curriculum and trainings for our 4-H youth development programs. So, Anne, thank you for joining me today on this podcast.
Thanks, Carrie. I'm happy to be here.
So, Anne, we need to start off with you introducing yourself. Tell us, you have so much experience, but if you could share with us why the passion in STEM and what have you done through your work to engage young people in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics?
Well, I just have had a long interest in STEM and science learning. I think I'm a curious person, and I think the wonders of the world are something that everybody should be in tune with and asking questions about. And so I've really felt strongly about how do we engage young children and young people and the adults who work with them in being more curious, asking good questions, and really exploring the world through those different areas. And science, of course, is everywhere. So it has always fit with my work. And I have always enjoyed the experimentation, the study of aspects of science and nature. And so I just have tried to share that passion and to really focus my work on equipping the adults who work with young people to be effective at leading them in science or engineering exploration.
Well, I have to share a story about that because you also helped me about 5 years ago when my youngest son was a kindergartner. I was volunteering in his kindergarten class and I wanted to do something with that class on science experimentation. And you maybe remember I called you and I said, do you have an idea for this? And knowing that you would, and of course you introduced me to the I wonder idea. And so as you talk about that interest you have and the curiosity that you have, you helped me think about an experiment for them where we did, I wonder what happens to an egg when you put it into a certain kind of liquid. So that was the experiment we did. And the kids loved it and they loved wondering what could happen and then discovering what could happen. And so today we are going to talk about, as I mentioned in the introduction, a curriculum that does just that. It inspires children to ask questions and to conduct experiments. So as we back up a little bit with the curriculum, it's now developed, it's piloted, it's going forward, but I'd like to have you share with us the story behind and the inspiration for developing this curriculum.
Great, I would love to. One of the things that have done in 4-H science over the years is lots of sort of hands-on experiments. And one of the things that's been really intriguing to me has been the types of chemical experiments that are super absorbent polymers. So those are things like you might put the little mini growing person that you buy at a little science store, you put in water and it grows, or the little alligator that grows
those
from a tiny thing,
things.
The sponge things that grow bigger and bigger. So that's a polymer. We also have the kind of polymers that absorb a lot of water and form crystals, and kids can play with them and explore, and they absorb about 300 times their weight in water. And so that was always really interesting. And the Insta snow that you might see where you add water and it becomes snow that kids can play with. So that whole I guess I have always liked the chemistry aspect of those. And so we did a lot of experiments with those, and I learned a little bit about them. And so about 5 years ago, I was actually at the State Fair and walking through the Eco Experience building, and I saw that the University of Minnesota had a Center for Sustainable Polymers. And I did not know that they had such that we had such a center, and it's a big university. And so I started talking to the staff there and kind of wondering what that was about, what sustainable polymers really mean. So I learned that this center on campus, part of the chemistry department, really looks at how do we create and uncreate plastics in sustainable ways. And so that made me more curious. So I just made a note that I would contact them and see if I could learn more and how that could might support some of the things we were doing, because I knew a very, very small, tiny bit about polymers through what we had done in 4-H. So a few months later, I called up the outreach director of the center. I said, this is kind of an odd call, but here's me, and I work with 4-H, and we've done some stuff about this, and I'm curious more about what your center does. I saw you at State Fair, and I talked to a person named Laura Seifert, who's now their managing director, and she had been in 4-H as a young person, so was somewhat familiar with 4-H. So we got talking, and we decided we'd meet, and she would tell me more about what they're doing. And so we did, and she said it's very interesting timing because we are just looking at applying for a grant through the National Science Foundation for it's a chemical innovation center for chemical innovation. It was a 5-year multi-million dollar research grant, and they had been talking about what kind of outreach component they would build into their grant, because that's a requirement from the National Science Foundation. And so they had done some work with schools and had been discussing this. And so she learned more about what 4-H was doing in STEM. We've had that as a national mission mandate since 2006 to really help equip our young people in the science and engineering, technology, math areas. So we have had a push in Minnesota on that since that time. So she was really interested about what we've been doing, and she took it back to her staff and her director, and we met a few more times and talked, and it was just a great circling whirl of ideas that seemed like it would meld together well. So that's sort of the background of how we got started, is really through my curiosity to learn more about something. So I think that's a good framework for what we're trying to do with the young people that we work with too.
It is. I love that part of the story of how that partnership came together. You were walking through the Minnesota State Fair, and there it was. Anne's curiosity was sparked, and the beginnings of this curriculum started. So tell us more about the curriculum itself. At what stage is it at?
Great. So the what we decided to pursue was a sort of a three-phase curriculum, kindergarten through eighth grade. So starting with our kindergarten through second graders, which in 4-H, they're known as clover buds. So they're just beginning in 4-H. And but then we would also want to build deeper learning in third through fifth grade, and then kind of a deeper, more self-directed inquiry kind of experience for sixth through eighth graders. So kind of a three-phase plan that we were designing. And one of the reasons we started with the kindergarten through second is nationally there is very little in STEM in 4-H materials or solid curriculum for that age group. And it's a place where we're trying to inspire those children to be curious, to see themselves as scientists or engineers. And it's the perfect time because they are so curious. They ask a million questions about everything, and they wonder. And that is something I love about that age. And so that's where we started. That's what we built upon. And we knew that that was a need nationally. Also that nationally, there's very little curriculum in 4-H around the physical sciences or material sciences. So so that was a nice piece of the fit. And we knew that if we started at that age group, then as we built the other levels of the curriculum, we could deepen that learning and really focus in a little bit more on the chemical research going on at the U, as well as helping kids have more independent inquiry experiences as they got older. So where we're at now is this is a three-state partnership with New York, Cornell University, and then with California at UC Berkeley. And our colleagues in 4-H are at University of California, Davis, and at Cornell. And those are places where the Center for Sustainable Polymers also has centers at those campuses. So one of the benefits that 4-H brought to this partnership is that we have this national network. And I could call up people in New York and say, hey, what do you think of this idea? And do you want to join in? And so that network that Extension has is really powerful. And that was one of the a highlight that the center saw us bringing to the table. So our colleagues, a few colleagues in New York and California, and then our Minnesota staff have been working on this curriculum over the last several years. So we have field tested and pilot tested it and revised and edited and all sorts of development to make it happen. So now it is published on its own website, and we have started to roll that out and promote it and train people in it and share it at national conferences and things to get the word out.
Now, I know sometimes I want to hear more about the activities and examples of how you have seen this change, how young people direct their curiosity and wonder. Before we get to that, though, let's talk a little bit about gender issues. So we know in science, we tend to see boys going into science more than girls. And you have mentioned to me that there's a gender equitable STEM learning research that you use to develop this. Talk a little bit about that challenge of getting both girls and boys excited and interested in science and the wonder and the curiosity.
Great. We have partnered, one of our partners for this project has been SciGirls, which is a program and a learning platform of Minnesota Twin Cities Public Television. And so SciGirls staff have worked with us as we've been developing curriculum. And so we've used the research that they have spent, that they base their work on and have spent years studying and putting into practice what they have developed and called the SciGirls 7, which are proven research-based strategies for engaging girls in STEM. And so we know there's some aspects of STEM learning in the past that have been more supportive of how boys may learn. And we still see that gender gap in the STEM fields in terms of careers and girls or females or males taking on those career pathways. And so the SciGirls 7 work helps those who work with girls in science. And our belief, of course, is that these are practices that work well with boys and girls. But they have taken all those years of work and applied some of those principles to how they train their volunteers or staff who do SciGirls programming or any kind of science programming with girls. So a couple pieces of that, for example, that girls benefit from collaboration so they can participate and communicate with each other. They're more motivated by projects that they find meaningful, personally relevant and meaningful. They really tend to enjoy hands-on and open-ended projects and investigations. They really benefit from relationships with female role models and mentors. So that's a critical piece to think about. And when they're encouraged to think critically, they really gain that confidence and trust to do the science or the math or the engineering. I think one of the pieces that's really critical is that we help all young people, but especially this is especially true for girls, that we want to give specific positive feedback on the things that they can control. So things like their effort, the strategies they use, the behaviors that they use or try. When we can give feedback to young people on those things specifically, they become more effective at and more engaged in the STEM learning because those are things they can control. So it's about that mindset aspect of it too, which we know is appropriate for boys and girls. So that's the gender equitable STEM work that we've done, and that collaboration with SciGirls has been an important part of that. So in the review of the learning modules, SciGirls staff reviewed those and then highlighted where those practices were being used so that when a facilitator takes the curriculum, it highlights, here's a way that you're using one of those SciGirls 7 to really encourage strong learning opportunities, especially for females.
And it'll also benefit the boys in the room as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's dive into the curriculum a little bit. Tell us about, can you give us some examples of activities? What might a session look like with this curriculum? And I know you said you've done piloting and you have closely worked with the piloting and testing with young people. Give us some stories. Tell us a little bit about what a session may look like.
I have, which has been very, very fun, very exciting. So the curriculum is 6 modules of different sets of learning activities, all built on experiential learning model and inquiry-based science. And so it moves, it starts with engaging the young people in their own wondering and curiosity and acting like scientists and engineers. So one of the activities that we've done in that first module is we have mystery boxes that they learn about how scientists use their senses of hearing and seeing and touch to figure things out. And so in the mystery boxes, which of course is exciting because who doesn't love a mystery, the young people listen and shake the box and listen for what they hear and try to figure out what's in there. They wonder about what's in there. They might then close their eyes and touch it and see if they figure it out. And so the activity is designed to have them think about what are the things they wonder about and then what do they find out using their senses. We use children's literature to help the children think about what does a scientist do or what does an engineer do? What are those kinds of things that a person in those roles does? So the first one really engages kids in sort of seeing themselves as a scientist and engineer, which is really fun. So one of the things I love about working with the kids that we have this through the testing and in general is that at that age, kids do see themselves as being a scientist or an engineer or whatever it might be. It's not a stretch for them like it is for some children who are older or us as adults. We might have a very preconceived notion of what a scientist looks like or does or an engineer, and they don't. And so that science identity is something we really want to build because we know from research that kids tend to lose that unless it's validated, encouraged, and explored by the young people. So that has been a really exciting piece. One of the things that teachers told us as we were building those mystery boxes was anytime kids can engage hands-on, that's what we want. And in school settings, they often don't have as much time to do that hands-on science or the materials to do hands-on kinds of science. So in non-formal learning, like in 4-H, we have the beauty is that we have that time, we have that space to do hands-on, touch things, sort things, and really get spend time learning about it and explore where kids are excited. One of the other activities in there as we move through the modules is we look at plastics. They're all around us, and many people don't know, and especially young children often don't realize that something that looks like metal might be plastic. Something that's foam is a plastic, a polymer. So looking at having them sort and learn about materials, what things are made of, is really age appropriate for that this age group. And so one of the activities that we've done is sorting a big bag of stuff. I say, here's my garbage. I kind of cleaned it up, but here's this big bag of stuff. And it's not really all my garbage. I tell them I didn't put food garbage in there and stuff, but it's mostly plastics or stuff. And so then we look at that and they have a chance to dig into it and sort it. And so they start asking that, you know, how what goes together and why did these things, why do I put all these things in a pile of similar things as compared to this? So that opportunity to sort and classify, of course, is something at that age group that we're trying to build a skill. So one of the things that was really fun was them looking at what could be recycled and why out of that. And one of the experiences I had last summer was working with a group at in elementary school who were in school with a summer school program, and the teachers wanted to add a lot of science and literacy to that. And so this was a group that was largely new immigrants to Minnesota. And so the diversity of their experiences that they brought was just fascinating, of them telling stories of what their home life was like or what they used. And so from everything from one boy who said, we just throw our garbage out the window. They just didn't have a place where garbage went, in his mind anyway. But that notion of where that plastics could be handled separately and the notion of saving the earth is a big piece of what kids really take out of this curriculum, that what happens when we throw all these things away in the landfill, or where what can be made out of stuff we throw away. So the notion that you can make a plastic Adirondack chair out of all your old milk bottles, or that you can make polar fleece is a plastic, or just those kinds of things. And the kids, well, what's this made of? And so that just that notion that they then could inform their parents or the people that they were with that, yeah, you shouldn't just throw that, you know, coffee from McDonald's, you shouldn't just throw that in the garbage. You can rinse that out and recycle it, and that will save the earth, because otherwise, you know, it gets in the oceans. And so that whole process through the modules of how they can be caretakers of the earth by what they've learned was really, really a fun thing to observe.
Yeah, and that curiosity and then learning, which makes you more curious to ask more questions, leads them to more learning.
Right. One of the activities we do is we call it the recycling factory, and they have a tub of water and there's a plastic screen in the bottom, and we use bits of aluminum foil and glass marbles and paper clips and newspaper and straws cut up just to represent the different things that go into a recycling factory and then how those get recycled. So we sort of mimic that by using a magnet, and the kids get to use the magnet and see what's attracted to the magnet. So we talk about the metals and what can be done with those, and then how a recycling factory looks at the paper or processes the plastic. And then there's this great video of a trip to the recycling factory from Reading Rainbow that then we watch, and they go, oh, you know, they see this giant magnet and these big bales of used plastics that then get shipped somewhere to have something else done with them. So that hands-on experience, you know, in a small way, and then seeing what that really, really looks like and why that helps the earth.
Well, now you've made us more curious to know, how do we get our hands on this curriculum? How much does it cost? And is it only for 4-H audiences, or can anybody use it?
It is for anyone who wants to use it. This first curriculum, again, is built for kindergarten through second. We have had some pilot testing where it's been kids of a wider range audience up to third and fourth, and it's worked pretty well with that age also. It's on its own website. It's 4hpolymers.org. 4hpolymers.org. And it's a free download. We just ask people to indicate who they are and a few questions about that, so we can use that as a tracking mechanism to see how people are using it. And so it is available free. There is no charge, because it's part of funding from the National Science Foundation. So those dollars at work to benefit anyone who wants to use it. It is not only for 4-H audiences. We have pilot tested it in, like I said, summer school settings, some youth, various youth programs with YMCA, in 4-H clubs, other summer youth programs. So it's available to anyone and useful for any age or any setting. I think it's designed as a non-formal learning setting, but yet it's easy to take the activities, and if you were in a formal classroom, you could utilize those. They're built sequentially, standalone, which means that they build upon each other over the 6 modules, and yet we really have worked to design them that you could take this activity and look at it and use it, and you might need to feed in a little background information before you did it on its own, but that each of the modules could stand alone because we know people will use it in all different timeframes and settings. So it's easy to piece it out by the activities that we have.
Well, thank you, Anne. As I started off this conversation with my story about how you helped me wonder and helped me bring that wonder to a kindergarten class, I just love listening to you talk about and share your passion around helping others be as curious as you are and facilitating that process. So thank you so much for sharing all of this information about the curriculum and how all of us can benefit from it today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. That's really been our goal, is equipping those adults to feel comfortable leading science activities, because that, we know, is where they feel most challenged. Every bit of research keeps saying that, as much as we've worked on helping equip youth workers to be more comfortable in engaging kids in science. We know that comfort level and confidence level is always a challenge. And so we've really worked to build the facilitator materials so that people could feel comfortable and have confidence with enough background information, as well as walking you through how to facilitate. So it's exciting to see it going out there, and I'm happy to share it with you. So thank you for having me, Carrie.
And as we bring this podcast to a close, I do want to point out that our Center for Youth Development website is www.extension.umn.edu/youth. And you will find information on working with young people during out-of-school time, other research, training, and events that we offer. And you can also find out more about our Minnesota 4-H program. I'd also like to invite you to join the conversation and read our Youth Development Insight blog. This is Carrie Robidoux with Anne Stevenson from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.